probably no surprise that the oil producers have stepped up to help advance awareness of that issue.
Oil companies pour money into an effort to defeat the Repeal the Giveaway referendum. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, December 20th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, at Anchorage residents near Chester Creek ask the city to fix their flooding problem.
We're hoping now that the Assembly will listen to us, and instead of just studying and redesigning, they're going to do something.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
2 years ago, oil companies spent more than $1 million to defeat an initiative that would have revived Alaska's coastal management program. They're on track to spend even more this election cycle to protect the new tax system they lobbied for. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports that contributions to a group committed to that goal are already rolling in.
Vote No on One registered as a political group in October, and already they've broken the $1 million mark. They've taken in $350,000 from BP, another $350,000 from ConocoPhillips, $250,000 from Repsol, and nearly $100,000 from Pioneer Natural Resources.
It's probably no surprise that the oil producers have stepped up to help advance awareness of that issue.
Willis Lyford is the campaign director for Vote No on One. The group is fighting back against an effort to repeal the oil tax law that was passed this spring, which caps the tax rate at 35% per barrel. When Vote No on One went public, their press release described them as a statewide leadership team representing business, organized labor, and community leaders. But their funding base is not so diverse. The Alaska Public Offices Commission requires any donation made to a political group that's over $500 to be reported. And so far, every Vote No on One filing comes from an oil industry group. Lyford says at this point, the support he's gotten from outside of the industry has come in the form of endorsements. He expects financial backing from other sources to come later.
We haven't gotten to that point yet. I mean, we've been up and operating for just about 60 days, and so we're a little bit in an organizational phase, but that will be part of our outreach, is to raise money outside of the oil industry.
In an emailed statement, ConocoPhillips spokesperson wrote that the company is supporting Vote No on One because they want to help the electorate make an informed decision. BP offered a similar position. Neither company shared specific plans to give more. Repsol's $250,000 contribution is a little less expected. The Spanish oil company is not one of the big three producers that have long influenced state policy. Trish Baker, a public affairs manager for the company, says they're committed to working in the state, and their contribution to Vote No on One shows that.
Repsol's very serious about wanting to operate in Alaska. We very much want to be here for the long haul.
Repsol is only in the exploration phase right now. They acquired their lease on the North Slope in 2011 when the state was under the previous fiscal structure. In the past year, Repsol's become a more vocal supporter of the new tax system.
This is a critical vote for us, and it may make a difference whether we can go forward or not.
Whether it's from Repsol, Conoco, BP, or another oil company, the citizens group that filed the referendum expects the money to keep on pouring in. Vic Fisher is a former legislator, a delegate to Alaska's Constitutional Convention, and now one of the lead sponsors of Vote Yes, Repeal the Giveaway. He says the group knew it was picking an expensive fight even before they started collecting the signatures needed to get on the ballot.
The oil companies are benefiting from the oil tax repeal, probably to the billions of dollars, so I won't be surprised if they invest millions of dollars to try and defeat the referendum.
Vote Yes, Repeal the Giveaway is not nearly as well-financed as the Vote No group. They've raised about $90,000 this year, mostly from small contributions, and they spent a lot of it during the signature gathering part of their campaign. Fisher says his group is focusing more on organizing at a grassroots level than trying to compete in an expensive advertising campaign. They'll keep reaching out to individual donors, but they're not anticipating any six-figure checks.
We'll be doing all the fundraising we can. It won't be at the massive scale that the oil companies have already given, but we will get what contributions we can from the people, and we'll use that to get our message across.
The most expensive ballot campaign in state history took place in 2008, when supporters and opponents of the Alaska Clean Water Initiative spent more than $10 million on advertising. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Earlier this year, the telecom giant GCI moved into a new line of business, buying three television stations in Sitka, Juneau, and Anchorage. It turns out those purchases were just the beginning. This month, GCI announced plans to buy three more TV stations in southeast Alaska. As KCAW Rachel Waldholtz reports, if approved, the deal could mark a new era in Alaska media.
GCI plans to buy all three CBS affiliates in southeast Alaska. That's KTNL in Sitka, KXLJ in Juneau, and KUBD in Ketchikan. The announcement comes just weeks after GCI won federal approval to take over the two NBC affiliates in southeast, KSCT in Sitka and KATH in Juneau, as well as KTVA, the CBS affiliate in Anchorage. The newest deal must be approved by the Federal Communications Commission. If it is, GCI will own most of the commercial television stations in southeast Alaska. Operating broadcast stations represents a totally new business for GCI.
GCI has traditionally been in the pipeline business.
David Morris is a corporate vice president and GCI spokesman.
Which essentially means we were transporting either people's phone calls or internet or cable TV.
GCI is the state's largest cable TV operator and also provides internet, telephone, and cell phone service. In other words, until now, they ran the plumbing. The purchases this fall represent the company's first major foray into what runs through that plumbing. Content. Morris says the company hopes to leverage its technical expertise, dominant infrastructure, and deep pockets to transform how Alaskans consume media.
That's the vision, is to be able to access information when you want it and where you want it.
That might mean eventually being able to access all GCI content on your TV, computer, or phone on demand. Morris says GCI's first step will be to convert programming on its stations to high definition. So far, however, GCI's purchase has meant a programming change for customers across Alaska.
From Alaska's news source, this is the Channel 2 News Late Edition.
On December 7th, viewers across Southeast lost access to Channel 2 News, the state's highest-rated television news program. Sitka resident Sabra Jenkins is among those frustrated by the change.
I've gotten to depend on it. Now that I don't have it, I'm really seriously thinking about not keeping my TV anymore.
Channel 2 News is produced by Anchorage NBC affiliate KTUU. It was carried on KSCT in Sitka and KATH in Juneau before GCI purchased those stations. But for months, GCI has been locked in a fight with KTUU over the terms of carrying Channel 2 programming. Now, KTUU's morning and evening news shows, about 22 hours of programming each week, are no longer broadcast in Southeast. In early November, when the two companies could not agree on a contract, GCI also took Channel 2 off cable in several parts of rural Alaska, leaving about 7,000 viewers with no NBC programming at all, except what's carried on the state-operated channel known as ARX. The two companies had actually agreed on terms by late last month, but the final contract fell apart over what would happen if KTUU ever acquired another station. GCI says KTUU's demands would double the cost of carrying their signal. KTUU says the cable company is trying to limit its future growth. But some say there's a larger issue at stake. KTUU was part of a coalition of stations that petitioned the FCC to deny GCI's station purchase in the first place. This is Brad Hilwig, marketing director at KTUU.
The concern has always been that they would leverage that distribution system, their cable operation, to squeeze out broadcasters.
Whether it's intentional or not, Hilwig says, that seems to be exactly what's happening.
You see then some of the things that were originally concerned about, perhaps taking shape now with GCI's move in cable or restricting access to Channel 2 on its cable systems, coinciding with its launch of its own news products.
GCI subsidiary Denali Media Holdings is in the process of launching a news program on KTVA in Anchorage to compete with KTUU's Channel 2 News. GCI's David Morris says the cable company will happily put Channel 2 News back on the air as soon as the companies sign a contract. For now, however, it's unclear when or if that will happen. But there's one thing on which everyone agrees.
It's changing times in Alaska media, and certainly there's more chapters to be written.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholtz.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Savunga is granted an extra whale strike.
It takes a community to do a whale hunt. You know, everybody has to work as one together.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Public Education Health Trust, formerly NEA Alaska Health Plan, delivers cost-effective health plans for Alaska families. They help Alaska's educational professionals, from school bus drivers to teachers, manage their health plan benefits efficiently. Public Education Health Trust provides members with low-cost plans, more choices, and local control, advocating for 17,000 Alaskans and their health care needs. This message sponsored by Public Education Health Trust.
Residents who live along Chester Creek near Valley of the Moon Park in Anchorage have been requesting a fix for a flooding culvert for years. This week at the Anchorage Assembly meeting, city officials said they're working to replace the culvert with a bridge. But residents worry it won't come quick enough. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has the story.
On a cold December morning earlier this year, retired schoolteacher Leah Hoffman peered into her crawl space to find Chester Creek literally right below her floorboards.
I have three sump pumps.
Hoffman lives in a small one-level home just off Arctic Boulevard near downtown. She lifts the trapdoor in her bedroom floor to show me how high the water got.
How much water was down here?
For the first flood, it probably came up to about 3 feet, I suppose.
Hoffman has lived in her house since 1970. She's about 30 feet from Chester Creek. She says her house didn't flood until the nearby bike path was built in the 70s. Hoffman remembers a resident of the neighborhood going to the assembly about a big flood that happened back in 1989.
And they said, well, it probably won't happen for another 50 years, but we're going to do a study on it and find out if we can redesign it in some way. And I think that was the last we heard about it until the next flood. And they again had assured us that they were going to try to do something about it. And they did something. In 2009, they put two little culverts up. And that's helped a little bit.
Just down the street, Jen Clark lives with her family in a 60s-style split-level home, which now has a musty odor from the flooding. She remembers when she noticed the water was coming in.
It was Tuesday, December 3rd. I was getting the kids up for school, sent my daughter down to the basement to feed the cat, and she stepped in about 4 inches of freezing cold water. It was about 4 inches deep over the entire 1,500 square feet down here.
Clark called her neighbors, family, and the city for help. Her home is set much further back from the creek than Hoffman's. But when the culvert backs up, groundwater floods in through a drain in her furnace room. City workers eventually unclogged the culvert, and the water started receding. Clark spent much of the day using a broom to push water back down the drain.
And I did that all day. That night, my brother and some friends came with a sump pump, and we continued with the wet-dry vac. And then the next day, coworkers and friends brought a big dryer and some fans, and we just cranked it up in here. It was like 100 degrees down here when we went to bed that night, just to try to dry it out and save all the insulation that we just had installed.
Clark says her family has lost thousands of dollars worth of belongings that they've slowly been carting off to the dump. The lower level of her home has flooded 2 out of 5 years since they bought the home in 2008. Recently, she testified before the Anchorage Assembly with about a dozen neighbors standing behind her. The main thing they're asking for is a new bridge to replace the problematic culverts. Anchorage City Manager George Vakalis said the city is asking the state legislature for $2 million to build the bridge as part of its 2014 legislative request and plans to study the ice problem in the new year. Clark just took out flood insurance. Back at Hoffman's house, she doesn't have any flood insurance, but she's looking into it. She's relying on her sump pumps, which constantly push water out through a pipe into her backyard. She says she hopes after years of flooding, the city will finally correct the problem.
We're hoping now that the assembly will listen to us, and instead of just studying and redesigning, they're going to do something.
But whether the funding to build the bridge comes through depends largely on what legislators in Juneau decide. And the city has a long list of higher priority projects. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The St. Lawrence Island community of Savoonga has received an additional bowhead strike from the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission. The allotment permits the community to go after one more whale this season. The community harvested two bowheads already this month. But with its current economic disaster and lack of walrus meat, Savoonga hopes another whale will bolster food stores this winter. KNOM's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
For many families in the community, whaling is the only affordable subsistence activity at the moment. And that's because, as Perry Pengawi, alternate commissioner for Savoonga Chieftains Association, says, unlike other forms of hunting, whaling is a collective undertaking.
It takes a community to do a whale hunt. You know, everybody has to work as one together.
As a whaling association, crews pool resources and together purchase fuel and other necessities like harpoons and rope. Few jobs exist on the island. Most of the community's income comes from walrus ivory. In this spring, the island gathered only one-third of its average annual walrus intake, and with that, only one-third of its cash opportunity. Pengawi says 80 to 90% of Savoonga's population depends on walrus ivory for their income.
Most of the people that do carve ivory, that's their main source of income right there. And with the few jobs available, you know, in town, there's a few people that work, you know, year-round or seasonally when school starts or whatever. But that's the main source of, for the majority of the people that have that income.
Savoonga has until March 1st to use its auxiliary strike. This is the second supplemental strike the community has requested in the past 5 years. Reporting from Nome, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
A number of businesses in Anchorage donated food to St. Lawrence Island in time for the Christmas holiday. Vi Wachery, an organizer at Anchorage-based Alaska Community Action on Toxics, or ACAT, is from St. Lawrence, and when the seasonal walrus hunt failed this year, she decided to do something to help.
I felt that we needed to step forward and give back to a community. I wanted to give back to our families and friends. I had learned that our elders and children were hungry and that their daily needs were not being met.
ACAT's St. Lawrence Island Food Crisis Fund and the local businesses raised 7,000 pounds of food for the villagers. And with the help of Everett's Air Cargo, Express Yourself Expediter, and Bering Air, the food is on its way to the island now. Every household in Savoonga and Gamble is receiving a substantial package of food right before the holidays, which contains rice, flour, meat, and other needed staples.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Ketchikan, Kotzebue,
Dillingham, Sitka, Chugiak,
Fairbanks, Fort Yukon, Wrangell,
Barrow, Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Ed Schoenfeld. This week on AK, robots. Five rural Alaska schools squared off this month in a virtual engineering competition run by LEGO and GCI. It was a big learning experience for everyone, but especially for the squad from Unalaska. They were competing for the first time, and as KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal reports, they brought some unique strengths to the table.
At 8:30 on a Saturday morning, most teenage boys are still asleep. Even if they're not, they probably aren't playing with Legos. But here in Unalaska, five junior high boys are gathered in the public library. They've got a motorized truck they built out of Legos and a giant game board.
Well, the theme is nature's fury, and so all this relates to like natural disasters and stuff.
That's Brian Conwell, the captain of the Unalaska Raiders robotics team. They're part of a national Lego league that's meant to get kids interested in engineering. Unalaska and other schools are going to compete today to see who designed the best robot. They've all got the same course to test them out on. It looks like a town hit by a big disaster. The Unalaska Raiders practice driving their robot on it. They try to pick up two Lego pets and take them to the safe house where their owner is waiting. The truck shoves the pets into the house, but pushes so hard the human owner pops out. Not good. Johnny Kongsuk and Ken and Jordan go over to their computer to see if they can work out the kinks in the program. Getting the robot to do the basics was harder than they thought, Kenan says.
With ours, forward is backward, and backward is forward.
How did that happen?
I think we reversed the motors by accident.
Solving problems is a big part of LEGO League, especially for teams in rural Alaska. Big Lake, Holy Cross, McGrath, Valdez, and Unalaska are all too far flung to travel to a LEGO meet. So GCI is hosting a video conference for them today, and GCI employees are serving as judges. They interview each team to start, and they ask some pretty tough questions about establishing goals. And then...
I'm curious if you can tell me, did you have fun doing this?
Yeah, we had so much fun.
Did you look forward to doing it?
Yeah.
You would definitely do it again?
Yeah.
It looks like you guys did have fun doing it.
That actually counts for a lot. Part of the challenge here is to manage a project and still be creative. The Unalaska Raiders think they've got that part covered. They have to present a research project on natural disasters. Their topic was tsunamis. But to get the message across, they picked a non-traditional medium. Jonathan Lee jumps into a rap about emergency alert systems.
Waves are crashing by the shore. I can't handle this no more. There's this thing on its way. Better run or else we'll pay. That thing is a tsunami and I can't find my mommy. We got to send this text so fast so this time will forever last. Why did this happen?
After the presentations are wrapped up, it's finally time for the competition. Unalaska and Valdez are up first. A volunteer referee appears on screen in a headset and striped jersey.
All right, then we are ready to go in 3, 2, 1, Lego!
The Raiders try over and over to knock down a stack of blue pins that are supposed to be a tsunami, but the pins don't budge. Soon enough,
2, 1, time's up.
The referee counts up their points.
Unfortunately, you guys had a score of 0 this match.
The team's disappointed. But when the next match starts, they focus on tasks they know the robot can accomplish. And after each race, their score inches up. At the end of the day, Unalaska doesn't have the most points. That honor goes to Valdez. But it wasn't just about high scores. The judges recognized teams that were strong in the fundamentals, like teamwork.
But also in problem solving and fixing problems, and that goes to Unalaska.
The Raiders are pretty proud, but they know they've got more work ahead of them. New programs to write, bugs to fix, but it can wait. After driving robots for 4 hours, it's time to put aside childish things and take a nap. In Unalaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're headed to the community of Chivac in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta.
My name is James Tyler. I live in Chivac all my life, and I work as a laborer, and I do hunting and enjoy Chivac, my hometown. We live in a rolling hills, it's flat, but in distance about 20 miles north of us, there's some mountains up there that we could see. But it's beautiful. It's very beautiful out there in all seasons. Before we moved, there's old T-Rex down south of this town. Back in those 50s, there's that flooding. And our elders had to move up here, about north of that old T-Rex. And we live on the hill right now. They got ice fishing just down at the river. We got out there about maybe 10 miles out to go set out the nets under the ice. Go ptarmigan hunting at this time. And most of the time that women always like to go down to a river and do tomcod fishing. Yes, every year at this time, we got a very good, exciting event after Christmas. We always have a Christmas tournament, basketball tournament. They always come out here and make this tournament more lively. A lot of people come in from surrounding villages and make this town more fun. Just wanted to say that I want to give everyone, every person in the state of Alaska, a very happy Merry Christmas. And looking forward for 2014.
James Tall lives in Chivac. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. If you want to hear your community featured, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Lauren Rosenthal, Monica Gokey, Annie Fight, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Ed Schoenfeld.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Rachel Waldholtz in Sitka, Daisy Eaton and Ellen Locke here in Anchorage, and Anna Rose MacArthur in Nome. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. The Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnickarm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Matsu Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnickarm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority. Alaska's Tobacco Quitline is ready to help you succeed in your decision to quit tobacco. Take advantage of proven successful free resources. Trained quit coaches will provide support services to help you quit for good with confidential counseling. There's free nicotine replacement therapy and a tailored quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.